On 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to the Science of Sport on Melbourne's Home of Sport, 11.16 SEN. I'm Craig Harper. Jackie Lauder is sitting opposite me. Professor Mark Fabreo is not sitting opposite me. He's had a little bit of an op. Is that right, Jack Wendland?
Yes, he had his knee operated on just before last week's show. So he is recovering. So
convalescing.
Hopefully he's doing well. I think it was a fairly straightforward operation.
I'm sure he'll be listening. So hello, Marky boy, I hope you're well. I hope you're recovering quickly. And if you could be back here next week, that's beaut, because Jackie's away next week. So I really don't want to do a one-hour monologue, and neither does Melbourne want that. So if you can make your way back here, that would be terrific. Interesting day here in Melbourne, a little bit overcast. It's either really hot or really not at the moment.
Well, it's not cold. No. I wouldn't say it's cold. It's just a little bit wet.
But it's summer and it's 16 degrees.
Yeah, but it's going to get up. So it'll be fine. You can't do anything about the weather, so you may as well just get on with it.
Oh, that's right. That's right, Craig. Stop focusing on things you can't change. Ice to me. Control your controllables. And don't waste energy on crap. All right, Jackie. How much did that cost?
If that is what is going to happen next week, the monologue, for God's sake, please come back, Mark.
Don't do that. That is
just torturous.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a little bit, Jackie Lauder, of course, is one of Australia's premier sports psychologists, as voted by Peaky and me. Do you?
Troy's very nice to me, and so is Tony.
Oh, really?
So I get good support in here, yeah.
Tone and Zanna's?
Yep.
Well, thanks, boys, for giving our girl a little bit of love. Do you ever, I know you're much more measured and rational than me, but do you ever get a bit, in a controlled, nice, reasonable way, do you ever get a bit cranky at your clients where you're a little bit, hey, listen, all right, okay, we've gone around in circles a bit. I've been supportive and but it's time for you to harden up a little bit. Do you ever have that chat or
don't use that word.
No, aversion, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I don't think it's not cranky. It's just we get to a point where we say at the end of the day, I can only give so much information and advice and encouragement, but they have to then be able to take it and move with it. So, yeah, of course you always get to a point with some people where you say, you know, it's the last thing here. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to move forward or are we going to sit in this space?
Are some people hardwired, athletes and non, to focus on the negatives?
That would be all humans. That's right. How our brain is wired. Your brain is actually, the number one thing your brain is there to do is keep you safe.
I don't agree. All humans focus on the negative.
No, that's not the question you asked me.
I said, I don't think I'm hardwired to find negatives.
Listen to my answer.
Well, no,
the number one thing your brain does when information comes in, it comes in through your amygdala, and that is your safety center, which says, I'm comfortable with this information or I'm not comfortable with this information, right? Now, because the number one thing your brain is there to do is to keep you safe, all humans, your first thing is protection, but we have different levels of protection where we go to that negative or positive.
All right. Well, okay. Let's put it in layman's terms, Jackie terms. No, but what I'm saying is, are some people hardwired to be more pessimistic than others?
Yeah, I think your experiences and the environments you grow up in, certainly in the first 3 years of your life, if you are in a lot of environments that are unstable, noisy, where you don't feel safe, then yes, you can become a lot more pessimistic.
But that's environmental and experiential. I'm talking about biological.
I told you the biological answer first.
Some of the people out of the womb are just more negative than positive.
Yeah, but we're still all, our brains are all wired initially to protect more than they are for anything else. Mm.
If you want to join in this conversation, because I'm clearly losing, 9429 1116. That's right, Jackie, our producer, glass half empty. But I know people who have been through crap.
Yeah, that's your approach.
Hang on, let me finish, bossy boots. I know some people who have been through stuff forever and they seem to be always finding the good. They're not unrealistic. They don't have their head in the sand. They acknowledge the tough stuff, but they seem to be always you know, have a good attitude and a positive outlook without being delusional.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. But the first question you asked me was,
all right, well, let's get to the current question.
Right.
How does that work?
Yeah, well, again, I think that that does have a huge influence on the people that you have around you,
right,
as well. So if you, if I'm someone who's really negative and you always agree and let me go on with that, and that's, you know, three or four people that I have around me, then of course I'm going to be far more negative because everyone's entertained that and let me do it. But it's also too about if the people in your life have always just dismissed you when you've had a stress and said, don't worry about it, you'll be fine, that isn't helping that negative person either because they've expressed to you, I don't feel safe, I don't feel comfortable with this. So you saying, oh, it'll be fine, that's, if it was that easy, they'd be doing that themselves. So it's about making sure we address someone's concerns, but also providing solutions and getting them in the direction of always trying to find a solution.
Chris has joined in. It's a fact. It's a fact. Thanks, Chris. Chris is on the Jackie train. All right, here's a red herring for you that I've wanted to ask you for some weeks, but I keep forgetting, but it just came to mind now.
Right.
Tell me and the listeners about, and don't get all political, we just want the real deal, your thoughts on hypnotherapy or hypnosis as a treatment for anything from giving up ciggies to dealing with anxiety to, you know, performance anxiety as an athlete, blah, blah, blah. Any value in it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so my thoughts are it is a very deep form of relaxation. I don't know enough about it. However, with any treatment and any type of practitioner as well, I would say the same thing. Absolutely, it works for some people and it depends how open you are to it. But I also think it depends on how hardwired the behavior is that you're trying to change. So, you know, if it's habits like smoking and things that they do every day, my experience is I've seen a lot more success with that. But if it is the way people respond to things and situations, so they've got a style, but the situation changes all the time, I've found with my clients less success doing that. So I think there's absolute value in it, but it's very much dependent on the person.
So my next question is, listening to Jackie Lowner tearing me up today and just doing beautifully, my next question is, when people, which is all of us, go through peaks and troughs of motivation, inspiration, let's just stay with those two for the moment. And Jackie, our producer, has written something interesting on the board which correlates with this, which is accountability, which is, you know, something that will help us, you know, do what we need to do in the absence of, you know, excitement in the moment, you know, doing the things that we need to do to produce the results that we want, kind of even when we can't be stuffed.com. What are your strategies or what are your thoughts, not necessarily what would you prescribe, but maybe what are your thoughts for people who go, yeah, but I'm always battling motivation, which I think is everyone, including you and me, not battling, but going through peaks and troughs because it's the human experience, it's the human norm. How do we stay productive and effective and proactive for the most part? You know, so if we look back at the last year, for most of that year, we've been in a pretty good place despite the peaks and troughs. How do we stay productive and proactive and effective even in those days or weeks or maybe even longer when we can't kind of, you know, feel it?
Okay, so if you, my advice would be if you can't feel it, don't try and take on things that are too big because you're probably setting yourself up not to achieve what you want to achieve in that moment. So if you're feeling really flattened down, which is 100% a normal experience for every single human being, if anyone tells you that they are motivated all the time, they are lying to you. Now, they might be someone who, as their disposition, is generally a fairly positive, motivated person, but no one is like that all the time. That's, you'd be exhausted.
Do you think that maybe it's, I agree with you, my understanding of motivation is no one's motivated 24/7.
No.
I'm positive, right? But that's my perception of what motivation is. Do you think that some people have their own, I guess, definition of motivation, so based on their understanding of it, they're permanently motivated?
I think that's how they describe themselves, but in practicality, they can't be permanently motivated.
So because, what is motivation?
Motivation is when you're producing some of the good chemicals like your dopamine, which is your motivation chemical, where we want to do something and we're proactive about actually doing it, right? So you've got good serotonin levels, so you're thinking clearly, so we're working in that front part of our brain where we make really good decisions, right? When you're not motivated, you're coming from a whole different part of your brain where you're producing your stress chemicals, so your adrenalines and your cortisols.
But
right?
what are we feeling emotionally and psychologically when we're motivated?
We're feeling confident, we're feeling in control, and we're feeling like we're positive about, and I think we're looking forward and we're enjoying what we're about to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you think about times in your life where you've been the most motivated you've ever been, why?
What, for me personally?
Yeah.
I guess because I'm excited about something. Something's happened. There's a stimulus.
Yep.
Something, I've got a challenge that pushes my buttons. But I also know that what would excite me would not even be of interest to some other people.
Yeah, correct.
Like if I said to you, I've got a gig for you, Jack, I want you to talk to 1,000 people, I'm pretty sure you'd go, awesome.
Yeah.
When? And you'd spend the next 3 weeks thinking about it at stages, prepping, getting organised, and by the time you got on stage, you'd be excited. You and I are probably the exception. You know, I would say 8 or 9 out of 10 people would be like, not a chance in hell that I'm ever doing that.
But I think too, when you're looking at motivation, some people are very individually motivated and want to go down their own path. And I think we look at athletes that choose an individual sport because they want control over their training and their results and everything else, right? And you've got other people who their motivation comes from sharing an experience. Mm. So if we look at a lot of the people that would listen to this program, they'll go group training versus individual training. Some people love the group training and, you know, the trainers that get all the vibes going and yell at them and all that sort of stuff. That would absolutely put me off training. Mm. I'm self-motivated. I don't need somebody to start yelling at me about, you know, to do something 10 times or whatever it is. I'll do it 10 times and I'll do it properly, but I'll do it on my terms because I'm going to motivate myself.
But even your language, because you don't like that, is I don't need someone yelling at me.
Correct.
Whereas I might say, hey, it'd be great to have someone there cheering me on, coaching me, encouraging me, getting in my face, you know.
Your interpretation is different.
That's right. And that same experience, completely understandable because we create our own experience. You know, for you, that's a negative. I'm like you, but for somebody else, that might be an important ingredient in getting where they want to go is having that kind of support because they respond to that.
Don't you think for a lot of people, though, they need to put actual time and effort into thinking about a number of components that's going to help them maintain their motivation? Because my first thing with anybody that's lost motivation is I will ask them, you know, what is demotivating you, right? So for me, a demotivator would be that person yelling at me, yep, not doing it. I don't want to be, and I played a lot of team sport growing up, but now where I'm at is if I'm going to do an activity, I want to be accountable for it. Because if I turn up and I train hard, I expect everyone else, if I'm in a team, to also train hard. So, you know, I know that one of the things that may affect me in a team environment is lazy teammates. Right? So it's the same in a workplace. If you think about in a workplace, what are the things that are demotivating you? And this comes back to your first question, right? Is if you spend all of your time focusing on the negatives and the things that are demotivating you, you're going to end up feeling completely unmotivated more consistently. Whereas if you say, okay, I don't like that other person in my office, but how much do I have to do with them? And can I just focus on the skills and the things that can contribute to my job rather than the fact that I hate that they talk about their kids all day or they talk about, you know, their diet or whatever?
One of the things I hated at uni, and tell me if you hated this, was if you've been to uni, you know this, folks, sometimes you'll have to do a group project and you would all get the same mark. And
yes.
I'm like, that's not right.
No.
That's not right. And I'm like, I'm up to the lecture. I'm like, what then? What'd you say? I go, so if I bust my ass and I make this, you know, awesome, that moron over there who did nothing.
Yes.
He's getting a high distinction because I did the work.
Yep.
I go, how's that fair?
Yeah. And it's not. The reality is that, and that's one of my pet hates as well, because it always falls to the same person. And it 100%. Was always me because I'm motivated and I want a good grade.
I was exactly the same.
But what I say to people in that situation, if you can spend your time getting annoyed at it, but if that's the task that you've been set, at the end of the day, and this is going to sound like an old school teacher, but that person is not going to be successful beyond the classroom or anything else if that's how they go about things. So, you know, we know it in group activities, what we call social loafing, where you're letting others...
Oh, I like that term.
Where you're letting others do all of the work and you're happy to take the credit and the win. And this is why working in team sports or even corporately, you do a lot of corporate stuff in a team, why it can be so hard is because you've got some loafers in there that will let everyone else do the work.
I call them energy vampires and bludgers.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've opened the door on an interesting conversation, and that is we've spoken about that physiologically and mentally and emotionally and practically different things work for different people. So when we talk back, when we come back, sorry, Jackie and I are going to talk about finding your blueprint for success, finding your blueprint to get the best results for you, because there's no kind of prescription that is globally effective. So we'll talk about your personal blueprint when we come back.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Larder and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sport. It appears Jackie Louder has got quite the fan base here in Melbourne. And me, nothing, donuts, but that's all right. Just pack my self-esteem back into my pocket. Off the SMS, Jackie, if you could read the top one, which is relevant to what we were discussing.
Oh, yeah. I'm a lecturer at Monash Uni. For group work, we evaluate group work via a survey. We adjust marks as needed. Huge task with 600 students.
What does that mean, we evaluate group work via a survey?
So
I don't get that.
Maybe it's about how they found the group and, you know, did everyone contribute equally? And I get that, but our point was we don't like it.
Because even what people put in a survey,
someone's still going to end up doing most of the work. So
Penny,
maybe...
we appreciate your thoughts, Penny, but Penny for your thoughts, thoughts for your Penny, thoughts from your Penny. Shut up. I feel like Sheldon. Penny. it's just, I want to get marked on what I do. I don't want to get marked on what you don't do, you know?
Okay, so my...
Spoiled only child. Go.
All right, my question for you is, can you think of a time where, and I know you're generally always pretty motivated and looking forward and positive, but what has been the biggest challenge for you where your motivation completely got tested?
Food.
Food.
Always food.
Still.
Yeah, sometimes. Look, my motivation, I guess, I'll say food, and without being too boring, like I've had a lot of things in my life where big, awesome big things nearly happened, like 15 times.
Yeah, yep.
Like I'm sure I can share this. I got asked to do a thing for the ABC to do a pilot for a show called The Life Coach.
I remember you talking about this.
Yep. Went up Sydney, smashed it, went great, great reviews. Everyone's like, wow, this is awesome. You're awesome. That's amazing. It's pretty much looks like it's going to be green lit or green lighted or given whatever the term
given
is.
The green light, yes.
And pretty much from then, nothing happened ever. And that's cool, but it wasn't like, oh, look, we'll see what happens. I'd been told pretty much it's in the can.
Was it a project that you were really excited about?
Well, I was excited about it because I'd been given that opportunity, and quite often, you know, where I get offered things all the time, big and small, you know, worthwhile or not. Some of them are just junk, like we want you to endorse this and it's rubbish. But yeah, and I think also because a lot of things that I've done, you know, like when I started personal training, no one was doing personal training. When I set up the first PT studio, everyone said it won't work, all that stuff. So I've kind of been out in the wilderness a little bit going, geez, I hope this works.
Yep.
And then, you know, but I think also because I was a fat, insecure little kid, I was for a long time, literally insecure, fat little kid, for a long time, I dragged that with me. And I was always trying to be good enough. And, you know, without being too, I think a lot of people are, but they just don't acknowledge that. And so one of my biggest learnings in the last 5-10 years and sharing with clients is trying to figure out who you are beyond what you do, and trying to figure out who you are beyond your career, who you are beyond your brand, or what you look like, or how good you are at footy, or what your bank balance is, or where you work, or what people think of you, all that stuff, trying to figure that out at my core. All right, let's take away all my stuff. Who am I? Without being too deep, but it's true. Like, you know, we're not a sport, and we're not a body, and we're not a brand, and we're not an academic achievement.
And we're not machines.
We're not machines. So for me, that was like, I got to when I was mid to late 30s, where I'd really, in the sense of where I was in the industry and doing, I'd killed it and I'd done really well. But in the middle of all, and I was writing for the Herald Sun, and I had 3 gyms and 2 other businesses and over 100 staff and all these things going on, and writing a book and doing radio. And in the middle of all of that, I just felt like a dud. I'm like,
yeah.
But I'm ticking all these success boxes. Why is this?
But there is a phenomenon that we look at, and a lecturer told me about this. The first time I ever got a client that was referred directly to me, specifically to me, and it was a very high profile athlete. And I was like, oh, this person needs to be seeing someone good.
Yeah, that's funny.
And I remember speaking to a lecturer about this, and for people who are very successful, there is a fraud type syndrome.
Yeah.
And the explanation, and he gave me this great chapter in a book that I think he'd contributed to, and it was all about, you know, the people that are successful never think, they never sit back and go, wow, I'm really successful, I'm really good, I'm made here. They always want to keep learning more. And I think when you know that you never know enough, every time I do a professional development opportunity or course or whatever it is, I'm like, wow, I need to know more about this. Mm. So I always feel like it's the start. And it's great. You get some tools to come back and work with your clients.
Mm.
But I think sustaining that success, you are going to have those moments where you feel like you're a fraud and you're not good enough. And I think that can be healthy, provided it doesn't take over, where you then start really pulling apart what you think are all of your flaws because you think you're supposed to. And I explain to a lot of my clients, there is a big difference between arrogance and confidence.
Mm.
Confidence is an internal feeling where you go, you know what? I'm not saying I'm the best in the world, but I know I can do this job and I think I can do it well. Mm. Arrogance is when you got to go around telling everyone how good you are. You don't maybe have a lot to back it up, and you're doing, what you're saying is about trying to put yourself above other people, making yourself think you are better and putting others down.
And I think arrogance and insecurity are really close relations.
I think so too.
You know, they're brothers. I remember, you know, when I did some stuff on Channel 10 for a few years, and every week that I did that, I felt, you know, insecure. I felt that, who am I to be on here telling Australia how to get their stuff together? Like, I'm the ex-fat kid from Maui. Seriously, come on. Like, and that was there for a long time. But for the whole time, for 3 years. But the thing that got me through it was intellectually understanding that I did this last week. I was quite good.
Mm.
Or I was at least okay, because they want me to keep coming back. So,
but you want to keep doing a better job every time you come back.
So yeah. there's the cognitive part, which is the knowing and the understanding. Then there's the emotional part, which always comes back to fear. What if I stuff it up? What if I'm not good enough? What if they don't like me? What if this ends next week? You know, all of those things.
And I think one of the big things with what you're just saying there is, and I work through this with my clients, is if I followed you around all day, and I kept asking you those questions. What if you fail? What if this isn't good enough? What if they don't like you? How long would it take before you'd want to just punch me in the face?
Well, I keep punching myself in the face, but the questions come.
No, but yeah. But it wouldn't take long because you would say that is not helpful. And the problem with a lot of human beings, and this comes back to motivation and being able to do things, is if you ask a question, answer it. Because you know what? What if it's not that great?
Mm.
Well, it's not because you didn't try. Your intention wasn't that good. Maybe it was just not that connection with the audience. But is the world going to end?
Yeah.
And are the people that love you and support you, are they going to bail out and they go, oh, I'm sorry, you weren't very good today, we don't want to know you anymore? Of course they're not. And I think when you take away some of those really big, you know, what we think are going to be the biggest catastrophes and answer the question, say, you know what, if it's not that great, we'll work on it. We'll see what you felt wasn't great and we'll do it for next time. So if you want to stay motivated, don't be afraid to ask yourself the question and say, okay, what was the problem today? What am I going to do to try and fix it or make it better next time?
And I think in the middle of all of this, which we alluded to coming out of the last segment, is to try to figure out, pay attention to what works for you and just take note. You know, like I know, for example, on a biological level, if I do weights in the morning, I'm not as good as if I do them in the afternoon. If I do cardio in the morning, I'm better. I know that if I eat X rather than Y, I'm going to feel better for longer. When I eat Y, I get heartburny and feel terrible, even though they're both good meals. I know if I have this much sleep, this is how I'll feel. If I drink this, you know, and so, and if I train this way and I have this much recovery. So what I've done over the years, which is what I work with everyone to do, is to figure out their own plan. So as you and I have said before, me as an exercise scientist, and all the other junk I do, when I'm talking to somebody, I'm going into the conversation trying to help them get where they want to go, not where I think they should go.
Yeah, and that's a big difference.
100%. Give me some clarity and give me a little bit of certainty about where you are now and where you want to be in 3, 6, 12 months. Then let's together create a plan. We'll create a plan. I'll use my 35 years of experience and knowledge and conversations and life and my qualifications, of course. And out of that, I'll come up with a bit of a plan with you. Then we'll see how that works and you will respond and adapt accordingly, because it's very rare that I give, in fact, probably never, that I give any of my clients the same recipe, for want of a better term, as I did to somebody previously, maybe ever. There's always something a little bit different.
Because they're different.
And I think one of the challenges for us is we always want the, not everyone, but the answer or the magic pill or the magic bullet or whatever it is. But it's trying to understand that on every level, you know, there's 7.4 billion in the people in the world. We all think differently. There's overlap, but we're all unique.
And I think my question, and I know we've got to go to a break, but my question for you coming back from that break is, what is the difference between success and results?
Yeah, well, okay, so we'll explore that on the other side of this. Good question.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. It's going off on the SMS. If you want to send us a message, 0433 98 11 16, or call us on the phone like a grown up, 94291116. We would love to chat to you. Don't forget, coming up after 11 o'clock, the first serve with BP, Paul Aitken and Sean Manawira between 11 and 12, and Sports Central will be happening between 12 and 5. Jackie Lauder.
So I wanted to have a chat about results.
Yes.
And success and failure. Are they the same or are they different?
No.
Okay, what's your answer?
Can I give you an example?
Great, do
that. Okay, you and I go for a run. We run 5 kilometres.
Lucky it's not further, because I'm a bit over it.
5 kilometres. I haven't run forever. And so I'm a back sore and I'm just my first, whatever. Bottom line is, you're running better than me. So we run 5Ks and my goal is I want to run 5Ks in 25 minutes. I end up running 5Ks in 28 minutes, right? So I've run...
Pretty good when you got a sore back.
Thanks. I've run 5 minutes. I've run 5 kilometres in 28 minutes. So that's the data. The distance is 5. The time is 28. I hate on myself. I was probably being unrealistic in the first place. I've run 3 minutes slower than I wanted to. You wanted to run 5Ks 30 minutes because you're more of a realist than me. You ended up running 26 minutes, your best 5K ever. No, let's say you ran the same time as me. What was mine? 20, 28.
25.
Whatever. We run the same time, but I wanted to run quicker. You were happier to run a little bit slower, but you pulled one out and you ran, for you, quite quick.
Yep.
Same result. For you, success. For me, failure. So we've done the same thing the same way. We've produced the same result from a time perspective, but the impact is different because the story we tell ourselves is different. My story is, this is a failure. Your story is, this is awesome. And for each of us, it's real. I'm genuinely disappointed. You're genuinely happy. Another really easy example of this to get our head around is, you know, and I'm no developmental psychologist, but, you know, with kids, there's a point where they will sing and dance and paint and perform and do whatever with no fear of, well, hang on, I wonder what everyone thinks of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no fear of rejection because they don't know that their performance, in inverted commas, can be labeled or judged or evaluated or critiqued. So they just dance and they just, and the dancing might be terrible and the singing might be terrible, but the experience for them is awesome because they love to do it. And then at some stage, that same kid with that same talent does that same thing. And people are going, that is terrible. What are you doing? And all of a sudden they learn that everything. So what happens is something changes internally and their experience is different. So I think we create our own failure or success in most things by the story that we tell ourselves. So even the person who wants to, you know, they want to win an Olympic gold and they end up out of the medals, one person might be devastated and another person with the same result might be quietly confident because they did the very best they could do on the day despite not winning the gold medal. So I think it's really a matter of personal interpretation.
See, I, taking the personal side out of it from your story, I listen to it and I say, to me, results, so the time or whatever it is, that is purely outcome.
Yes.
Right? So
I agree.
So I don't look at that because somebody could win a gold medal and not have got a world record time and not even got their own PB.
Mm.
But on the day, so my thing with success and failure is purely related to effort and you get to control effort. So your run, which might have been 25 minutes or whatever it is, I know you've deemed it as failure, but on that day, given you had a sore back, did you do the best you could do on that day from an effort perspective? Mm. If the answer is yes, then that is the most successful run you could have had that day. Now, I'm not saying emotionally that's going to make you happy or it might upset you, but that is still success on that day because I've seen plenty of performances and you would have too, and most people listening would have seen it, where against all the odds and you can see someone's coming back from an injury or whatever, for them to pull out a fourth, that's not the best they're ever going to be capable of. But that fourth is a very big success for them that day, considering what they've been through. On the next day, they may come first because things are a little bit different. So I link success and failure to effort, which is a controllable thing. I put results, which is outcomes, as an uncontrollable thing.
I think that's a good theory, and I don't disagree with you because I think there's no absolute answer to this. But that's success looking through the eyes of Jackie Lauder, right? And I think not everyone looks through your eyes or your filter as mine. Like somebody might go, that's crap. It's like even when I present stuff to people, I go, look, I'm going to tell you what I think and believe and have come to understand and have experienced and stories over 30 years, see what resonates. Like, not like this is how life works, so write this down and do it. And I think with all of this, some people would make their best effort. Some people, and I actually think that's not a bad way to evaluate success, but I think the experience for some people is still one of disappointment and failure.
Yeah.
Because of their self-talk.
And you're not going to take the emotion out of it, and nor do we want to. But I would always say to somebody, I have no problem, not that I want them to experience this, but I have no problem with someone feeling disappointment.
Mm.
But you need to be able to separate disappointment in a result versus disappointment in yourself.
Mm.
And if we use that example of your run, being disappointed in the result of the run is okay. I understand that because you want a better time. But being disappointed in your effort that day, that's not fair because you had a bad back. You couldn't, you know, we knew you weren't at your peak. So I think you've got to be able to separate disappointment in yourself versus disappointment in an outcome.
I think so too. Before we go to a break, let's go to Cameron from South Morang on line five. Morning, Cameron.
G'day, mate. Just finished my 17K run. I've been listening to the show the entire way.
Now, were you disappointed or happy?
I was actually quite motivated and I wanted to run a bit faster so I could give you guys a call before you finished the show.
You could have called us while you were on the run going, g'day, it's Cam from South. Wouldn't have been great radio, but it would have been funny.
Yeah, so I actually had a knee reconstruction in August last year.
That's recent.
And you're running 17Ks.
I did the City to Sea in November. I did the half marathon at Tasmania in January. So, you know, you talk about motivation and I think... very individual. You know, I've heard lots of stories of people that have done, you know, their knee reconstructions and they've had to take over a year off, whereas, you know, someone like myself, I put down a lot to do with both motivation and diet. I'm doing low-carb, high-fat, so, you know, the anti-inflammatory properties of that diet as well. So, yeah, just wanted to say that, you know, it is actually individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just want to keep hitting the pavement. Done 65Ks this week and, yeah, looking forward to the next couple of months.
Wow, that's amazing, man. And did you say you did a run
in November?
In November. What that, 12 weeks after your operation?
It was about 16. I'm heavily involved in parkrun and I did my first 5K about 10 weeks in. And I've been... you know, working alongside a physiotherapist the entire way, and he's just been absolutely amazed at the recovery. You know, I did my first cycle on a bike after 4 weeks at the gym. You know, I was in tears when I tried to get that first revolution, but, you know, I wanted to just get out there and try and recover the best I can because I just didn't want to be sitting down and piling the kilos on.
You've done a great job, mate, in that time frame.
100%. And you're exactly what we're talking about because we're talking about people who, you know, figure out the right thing for them. And no, I can tell you, I'm not going to be prescribing that program that you're doing, but I'm the first to say it's working. So keep doing it. So,
and you've got that professional support along the way.
100%. Congratulations, mate. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, Jackie is going to tell you how to deal with anxiety. She's not going to be all, you know, medical and technical and academic. For those of you who suffer from periodic anxiety, as one of my friends has this week, never had it before. He's had 5 panic attacks. I don't know if they're the same thing. We'll find out on the other side of this.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Goody gumdrops. What a great day. Jackie was just pointing out the fact to me that a cafe not that far from here is really busy on the hot days, but dead on the...
It's very dependent on the weather.
It's a weather-dependent service
and product.
You
can't get a table when it's nice.
No. What is that joint called over there? Let's give it a little plug. What's it called? Can you see?
Friends of Mine. Yep.
Pretty good, apparently.
It's a great cafe.
Pretty good. Yep. But, yeah, on the wet and soggy days, people are like, nah, I just make my own.
Yeah, they stay inside a little bit quieter.
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a destination on a sunny day. So we've covered a fair bit of ground today. I want to ask you something before we talk about anxiety. Now, I don't think I've ever spoken to you ever about this thing I'm about to talk to you about in all the time we've known each other.
Okay, should I brace myself?
I think you should. And okay. I'm going to throw you out a word, and it's controversial. And I just want your thoughts on it because someone was extolling the value of these things this week. Now, when we have this conversation, folks, we're not suggesting or endorsing anything. Nootropic. Do you know what a nootropic is?
No.
So a nootropic is a drug, a prescription drug usually, and a lot of them are used for things like treating narcolepsy.
Right.
But there's, I won't say the name because I don't want people to go searching it because I don't want to encourage anyone to do anything. But this person, not the person you would think, as in very smart, very successful.
So not sleeping.
So, but they use some of these things just for basically enhancing cognitive function and for being clearer and sharper. Now, this guy that I know is reasonably well known and I'm like, really? What? And he's like, yep. And he's a straighty 180, like doesn't smoke.
But he's taking these nootropics.
But periodically.
Right.
Periodically.
And prescribed by a GP?
Not sure about that bit. He may have acquired them other ways. I don't know. But I just thought maybe that's something that you could have a look into for us. But because it's just about
how to get them? Are you asking me? Or?
No. Like they're not drugs. Like there's no high. There's no, and apparently it doesn't affect your nervous system.
Okay, I'll look into that. Never heard of it.
Anyway, goody gumdrops. Well, all right. So as I was saying to you in the break, this is Jackie Louder I'm talking to, folks. Science Sport Hero of Week, 10 to 11. One of my friends, who is kind of a tough guy and, you know, businessman, got it all together, kind of. Apparently none of us got it all together, but, you know, outwardly. This person has had 5 panic attacks this week. Now, never had one in his life. This week, 5. And you said to me, what's going on? And my suggestion was, and I'm no expert, that there's just, I think, a few things out of his control. And when he feels out of control or vulnerable, because he, like a few other people in my world, including me at times, is a bit of a control freak. Not in a terrible way, but just in a making sure everything's where it should be kind of way.
Humans are control freaks.
There you go.
We don't like not being in control.
There you go. So tell us what a panic attack is, when and how it might happen, what we can do if we feel that anxiety. And we're not just talking about being a bit anxious, but we're talking about where I feel overwhelmed, my hands are shaking, I feel sick, I feel scared, I need to sit down, I don't know what's going on. I've had one bad one in my life, and it was 10 years ago, and you must have been driving to do a gig at Crown or something. No, I was sitting at home on a Saturday night watching stupid TV.
But something triggers it. So you don't just have it for no reason. Now, you may not be able to identify your trigger. Mm. Some people are very good at identifying it. Anxiety is a very crippling condition that if people are dealing with it, I think it is very misunderstood. They think, well, you know, just don't worry about it or get over it. But it is, you know, it's basically where your brain is producing so much cortisol and adrenaline that you can get to a point, and it was interesting, I was chatting to a friend about this yesterday as well, you can get to a point where your brain just shuts down. You've overproduced those and you cannot think clearly, because where your stress chemicals come from is your hypothalamus, your pituitary, your adrenal glands. Mm. Where our good chemicals come from, like our serotonin, our dopamine, that help us think clearly and maintain that sense of control, is your hippocampus, which provides context. So you're not going to be in both those places at once when you're having a panic attack.
So when you're having a panic attack, you lose a bit of
ability to think clearly and maintain context and therefore make rational decisions. So that is why when someone says, oh, don't worry about it, it won't work.
That's the worst. That's like saying, hey, don't be short.
Yeah, and I know people's intention when they say that is to be helpful, but it's actually not. It doesn't do anything. And often it can make the person feeling anxiety think,
that's
oh, God,
so
now
true.
You can't even help me, so what am I going to do? So before someone gets hopefully to that real panic where everything just shuts down, is as soon as you notice you're starting to feel anxious, I say to people, change your space. So if I'm feeling anxious in here and I've got the flexibility to leave the room, because I've made a decision to move. If you move, then your body starts producing different things.
And I guess you start to focus on, all right, I've got to get out of this chair, move over there,
and
open that door.
Stuck.
So you start to think about different things, just even navigating your way to where you want to go.
Yep.
So you shift your focus a little bit.
Yeah. Now, if I'm in the room with you now and I can't, because we're on radio and I can't just leave you to do a monologue, because we got a glimpse of that earlier and it wasn't amazing.
Hey.
So
hurtful. Come on.
If we're in the studio now and I'm starting to feel a bit anxious, what I can do is I can stand up.
Mm.
I might just, you know, do a few little stretches or even just moving side to side.
Mm.
If I can't do that, then what we try and say is find something that you can use as like a grounding.
Mm.
So it might be if I just put my hands on the desk and I feel like I've got something stable.
Mm.
Taking in big, deep breaths is not necessarily always the right thing to do. So it depends on how in control you feel. Mm. What I say to people is you're better off taking longer, slower breaths. So slowing your breathing down rather than taking in a big deep breath. Because if you're already really, really anxious and you try and taking in a lot of air, you can hyperventilate and that's not going to be helpful. So your first things are very, very simple. Have a sip of water, change your space. If you can find something just to ground you, that helps. And obviously, depending where you're having a panic attack. So if you can sit down, that's helpful. The other thing is, if you are with somebody, so say you're with your friend who's having the panic attack, if you can see that they're not able to think for themselves because they're that bad, what I can do is I can grab your hands and I can say to you, don't talk, just keep eye contact with me, but follow my pattern of breathing. When I say breathe in, and so I can help calm you down. But by grabbing your hands, I'm the grounding thing for you. So even if you have to squeeze my hands, it means that you're getting that little bit of security. If I keep eye contact and I say, don't talk, but just breathe when I say breathe and follow me, and I'm going to say it a lot calmer and a lot slower, it should be able to at least get you to a point we can then sit you down. But then I don't want to have a conversation with you. I want to just let you focus on your breathing for a few minutes before we try and sort something out.
I'm feeling a bit anxious. Can you hold my hands?
Well, hold your hand even if you're not anxious.
Thanks. I need support. Don't forget, folks, coming up between 11 and 12, Brett Phillips, Paul Aitken and Sean Manawira. First serve, of course, all things tennis. And after that, between 12 and 3, Sunday Sports Central with Rowan Connolly. I'm going to have a listen to that. I like Rowan.
Yep.
He's a good man. What have you got coming up? Do you need to plug anything? Anything?
No.
Well, let's just say thanks to the prof for coming in next week. Let's hope you do. Thanks for listening and tuning in, prof. Hope your knee's all right. Hope the rest of you is all right. I'm going to do a seminar today out at Deakin Uni with big Josh Leonardowicz, Australia's best bodybuilder, the big unit. If you feel compelled to come and hear Australia's biggest and best bodybuilder have a yak,
do that.
Come out there at 2 o'clock. You can buy tickets at the door. There'll be large people in a herd with bum bags and rice and chicken just moving in the one direction. Follow them. See you next week, folks.